Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, September 28th. I don't know if this part of the UN General Assembly from last week broke through in many news stories, but they had what was called a side summit. And at it, President Biden hosted a virtual gathering of leaders of other countries and international nonprofit organizations, philanthropists, scientists, and said to deal with what he called this global tragedy of COVID-19, we need to, quote, go big, Biden's words. And he said the U.S. would buy another 500 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine to donate to countries who need them. That includes much of the African continent, where only 14 countries have hit the milestone of vaccinating even 10% of their population, and only 4 countries are above 20% vaccinated. That while the U.S. is starting a third round of Pfizer shots, as you know, for those the CDC has deemed most vulnerable to serious disease. So to talk about the global COVID picture, and especially the picture in Africa, and what vaccine equity might mean, I'm joined now by Dr. Richard Mahigo, the Immunization and Vaccines Development Program Coordinator at the World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa. He joins us now from Brazzaville, Congo. Dr. Mahigo, hello from New York. Thank you for coming on WNYC.
Good morning or good afternoon. We are already in the afternoon here, Brian, and glad to be with you this morning.
Can you start by talking about the status of COVID-19 cases across Africa? How many waves have you seen, for example? We say second wave, third wave, we're in the fourth wave, I guess, in the United States now. Where are things there?
Well, we think the number of cases, unfortunately, are still increasing. On the continent in total, we have around 1.1 million cases that have been so far are recorded, with more than 207,000 deaths, which brings us to a case fatality rate of more than 2.5%, which is, by the way, superior to the average at global level. So we do have a few countries that enter what we call the resurgence, 16 countries. And an additional number of countries that are now almost in their fourth wave, Algeria, Benin, Egypt, Kenya, Mauritius. So although the last few weeks we have seen a trending down of the number of cases, but we still have quite a substantial number of countries that are still in a very difficult situation.
From what I've read, infection rates have been relatively low across Africa compared to other parts of the world. And I'm curious if you have a sense of how well they're being tracked. Or I've also read that the lower numbers are more about demographics and the fact that the median age in most African countries is much lower than in the United States and elsewhere in the West. And there are many fewer nursing homes where the most vulnerable are all in one place. So what's your understanding?
Well, no, thank you, Brian. I think some of the points you have raised have been very much discussed to try to explain the relatively low number of cases in Africa. But the reality, there must be a number of hypotheses, and it's a combination of some of these factors that potentially is explaining the comparatively low burden of COVID illness on the continent. Indeed, issues like demographics, age demographics, the potential, and I think this has been very much now explored, the potential cross-protection from previous exposure to circulating other coronaviruses could have played a role in that. But also, we need to face some reality as well, the limitation of the testing, which could have resulted in undercounting number of cases of death. Could have explained to that. But let me say also that we saw Africa being hit almost the last continent compared to other places. And there were quite some very stringent measure that was put in place, and which unfortunately had a very dear consequences on the economy, on the social life, very severe lockdowns that many countries put in place right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I think that had allowed more time for nation to react and then maybe to saw, to some extent, a better public health response here.
Yes. So the system for funneling vaccines from the developed countries who have them to the less developed countries who need them is called COVAX, as you know. That's where those 500 million doses President Biden just pledged will go through. There have been problems getting doses and distributing them, I understand. Where do things stand now?
Well, I think you are right. COVAX was really is a global initiative made to really respond to a big concern around equitable distribution of vaccines, particularly for the low-income countries, majority of which are located in the Africa. But we know very well that when the vaccines came onto the market, wealthier countries like the U.S. had already bought up all the doses. And the facto COVAX, the COVAX initiative, which was the major instrument, find itself in a situation where most of the vaccine have been bought up. So COVAX was locked out of the vaccine market and having to find new purchase agreement. Remember the situation in India, which was the major supplier for the vaccine, for the COVAX, where India stopped the export of the vaccine to try to deal with the devastating resurgence of the Delta variant there. So, but the situation has improved a little bit. So far, I think we have seen close to 180 million doses that have been administered, arrived to the region. But this is comparatively very low when we compare to the close to 6 billion doses that have been distributed globally. So the latest announcement by the Biden administration, I think President Biden, to provide 500 million additional doses is a much very welcome initiative to solve this problem of shortage of vaccine in Africa.
Well, I think one of the core questions is how big a difference will this pledge of 500 million shots make? That would bring the U.S. total commitment to 1.1 billion doses. But how many are needed to hit the target of vaccinating 70% of the world's population within a year from now?
Yeah, you're right. I think we to vaccinate 70% of the population, remember, Africa has got 1.3 billion people on the continent. So I think if we need to administer a minimum of two doses, we are talking about between 1.8 to 2.2 billion doses that will be needed before the deadline that was fixed to be September, the World Health Assembly next year, to hit the 70%. So I think the U.S. Government announcement, it's quite huge, but it's not going to solve all the problem. I think it's very important that the COVAX facility continue to receive vaccines from the manufacturers. The money has been raised. The problem now is to get the vaccines into the initiative so that they can be distributed to the country. Otherwise, we will continue to see the same process where this region is going to stay behind other continents.
Dr. Mahigo, I saw coverage of the side summit that said, despite the pledges that President Biden and others made for vaccines, it was disappointing because there was no promise to transfer the technology so these countries could produce their own vaccines. Is that something you think is needed?
No, absolutely. If there is one thing that we've learned from this pandemic, it's, I think, how vulnerable the continent is really with regards to vaccines exports, imports, actually, on the continent. Just to give you an idea, 99% of the vaccines that are currently being used in Africa are coming from outside. So we saw the countries that are producing vaccines, like India, that was the major supplier For the COVAX, when the situation went very bad in India, the country decided to stop all the export of the vaccines, making even more vulnerable the region for the response. So I think there is now a very strong push and a call for at least starting some vaccine manufacturing processes in Africa. And we have seen quite a very good advances the last few months with a few countries that have started to produce vaccine locally, at least in terms of fill and finish. South Africa is, for instance, doing that with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Egypt is producing as well as the Sinovac vaccine from China. Morocco are the same. And there are prospects from other countries with the transfer of technology to make sure that not only COVAX, a COVID-19 vaccine can be produced locally, but at least even other vaccines for diseases that are very much predominant in Africa, like malaria, tuberculosis, and why not HIV, that those vaccines can be produced locally on this region. So remember that we...
Go ahead.
We are going probably to be in this pandemic for another, if not one or two or even more years. So we will definitely need the production of the vaccine closer to where people live.
So the zero-sum game question on the minds of a lot of people. The U.S. just authorized third shots of the Pfizer vaccine for those over 65 or those at high risk of exposure or serious illness, not for others in the population, but still... The World Health Organization, for which you work, has spoken against boosters for the less vulnerable, at least, until the science is more settled or more people across the globe are vaccinated at all. What's your position on that?
Well, I think we've been very clear at WHO around this issue of booster dose. I think we do very well understand the concerns of some of the government, including the US or other government around the world, to protect their citizens, particularly against these new variants. But we know very well that what the data is telling us today, though there is some evidence of waning of immunity, particularly for some of the elder people, I think we still have enough evidence to show that the current vaccines that we have are still very much working very well to protect people against severe disease and hospitalization and ultimately death. So even the data that has been published by the US CDC is showing that clearly the people who end up in the hospital are those who are mainly not vaccinated. So we believe that in a world where only 4% of the African population have received two doses compared to in some countries in the US, close to 60%, in few countries in Europe, up to 80% of the people have received their two doses. It became a moral imperative, really, to make sure that those who are more vulnerable get at least the minimum of protection that will help them to avoid getting a severe disease and end up in an hospital.
I understand the moral imperative that you're arguing, but is it a zero-sum game? Could Pfizer and the other vaccine producers produce enough that with enough money donated by the U.S. and other wealthier countries, there could be enough for everyone in Africa and elsewhere around the world and enough for the third shots here?
Yeah, I think we've heard that those arguments. Unfortunately, the reality on the ground is that there is no vaccine for the people. There is no jobs to put in the arms of vulnerable people in many low-income countries. So we would like to see the increase of the production globally with the Pfizer alike and other vaccine manufacturer to make sure that the everybody can get the right protection.
What do you think is the impediment to production at that scale, if there is one?
Okay, there are probably not one impediment. There are probably several. I think, to be frank, I think we This is the first time in history that we are in a situation where billions of doses of vaccine have to be produced in a such short period of time. So the capacity of to scaling up the production is definitely limited. And this is what we have been advocating for, to remove, for instance, the barrier around the intellectual properties, so that the vaccine can be produced even in different other places where the ability and the technology exist to produce those vaccines. But this is not being done. So we cannot expect that the fewer major pharmaceutical companies will produce enough vaccine as soon, as quickly as possible to serve everybody. So I think we need absolutely to get to a situation where, at least for a pandemic like this one, some of the intellectual property rights could be waived temporarily, so that we could have a massive production elsewhere, which will help this time around, not only to protect those who have, are more vulnerable, and then as we are, data become available, even provide booster doses for those where immunity is waning.
This is WNYC FM HD and AN New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. A few minutes left with Dr. Richard Mahigo from the World Health Organization joining us from Brazzaville, Congo, as we talk about global vaccine distribution and vaccine equity and whether things need to change in this country for people to have enough vaccine doses in other countries. And we have some interesting looking calls on the board, so let's take a few before we run out of time. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John, you're on with Dr. Mahigo.
Yeah, hi. I would like to know about the Bureau of Investigative Journalism published a lot of studies, and so did other journalists, not studies, but inquiries into high-level bullying that Pfizer has done in South America to certain countries like Argentina, and they're seemingly doing it in Africa as well. There seems like there's a 500-pound needle in the room, and what that is basically that Pfizer wants to get paid in order to deliver these vaccines. And then also, like in India, which happens to be one of the largest pharmaceutical countries in the world, there seems to be something very suspicious going on. Yesterday, you had a great segment on eugenics, okay? And, you know, this is just a statement, not a question. It's very interesting. In India, the lower caste systems were not getting vaccinated. Same thing in Africa. There seems to be something going on that's very suspicious here. Otherwise, Pfizer and companies like that could produce enough vaccines and have them delivered to poorer countries in Latin America and in Africa. And I think something here is very nefarious going on. But my question again is, how come there are reports of high-level bullying, and does the guest know about these reports?
John, thank you very much. Well, first of all, Dr. Mahigo, I'm going to guess that you don't support the implication, which is that Pfizer and the wealthier countries are trying to kill poorer people around the world and darker people around the world en masse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the bullying, though, as I understand it, that he's referring to, the alleged bullying, is bullying for price. Do you know of anything like that going on?
Well, yeah, you're right. First of all, I think we definitely we are not thinking that there is a conspiracy theory around this. But what is true is that the amount of paper, the amount of the condition that countries had to fulfill before those vaccines have to be shipped, including issue related to liability and indemnification aspect that needs to be waived. So it has been quite an interesting story, particularly in a pandemic like this. So one could understand that at the beginning, when the vaccine will be rolled out, when people had not enough evidence and data in around the safety of some of these products, a company could have been a bit more cautious around issue related to liability and indemnification. But today we have more than 6 billion doses that have been distributed globally. We have a very good track record around the safety of some of these products. So we don't understand why we should continue to have such a high level of scrutiny around these documents before the vaccines are being shipped. So I think that's the remaining concern, and we hope that this is going to be solved quite soon.
Exactly. We thank Dr. Richard Mahigo, the Immunization and Vaccines Development Program Coordinator at the World Health Organization's Regional Office for Africa. He has joined us from Brazzaville, Congo. Dr. Mahigo, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.